Hi, I'm Matthew Kind. Every Monday, look for a fresh new episode where I'll take you behind the scenes and interview the insiders that are shaping the rapidly evolving cannabis industry. Learn more at cannainsider.com. That's CANNAinsider.com. Now here's your program. Are cannabis and hemp beverages on the verge of explosion? It depends if you can understand the fickle whims of beverage consumers. Here to tell us more is Jonathan Schultz of Backyard Sodas. Jonathan, welcome to Canna Insider.
Matt, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to talk to you for a little bit.
Give us a sense of geography. Where are you in the world today?
So I am in Denver, Colorado. We are at our office, which is based here in the Rhino neighborhood, and chatting with you from there.
Yeah, I get a lot of people moving to Denver from other areas because of COVID.
It's such a hot area right now. I mean, I think Colorado's done a great job of really mitigating and managing and people want to be outside. So this is a great spot to do that. We're seeing a ton of influx. Good for real estate, not probably so great for everything else, but, as far as resources and things, but, people need sun and people want to be outside and play. So,
yeah, good points. Well, I guess for Colorado's size and how cool a state it is, it was just a matter of time before, you know, it's only 5 million people. It's going to just probably double.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it already, you know, I mean, in the last probably 10 years and I will count myself as one of it where I'm not a native. So I moved here from Ohio about 10 years ago with my family. And, we did it for the same reason that everybody else did, which is the beautiful scenery outside. And yes, I think people are going to continue to make their way here. So.
Great. Well, give us a sense of what Backyard Sodas is on a high level.
Yeah, I like to tell people Backyard Soda is at heart a simple syrup company. We like things simple. and simple syrup is one of those things that people know about. They've probably used or said, oh, I've got to make some for a mint julep, but don't realize kind of how versatile it can be, especially when making drinks. And so our whole idea around Backyard Soda was to make gourmet drinks simple. We want people to think and to feel that they can create the drink that they go out and spend $14 or $15 for if they're at a high-end cocktail bar or they're out to dinner. And then they could do that at their house in their own backyard. And now they have the opportunity to do it both with an infused full-spectrum CBD version in addition to our regular non-infused syrups. And then we also have a line of ready-to-drink CBD-infused sodas and mixers. So that's... We're a pretty simple company, and that's kind of the way we want to keep it.
Can you share a little bit about your background and journey, Jonathan? You mentioned you're from Ohio, but give us a more sense of what you were doing before. Where in Ohio are you from, by the way?
So I grew up in Central Ohio. We actually lived in Cleveland for about 15 years. That's where I went to business school. Got my MBA from Case Western. Prior to that, we'd kind of lived in New York. We'd lived in Boston. And then my wife and I both graduated from Colgate University in upstate New York. So that's where we met. I've had a pretty varied background when it comes to positions and career. Everything was kind of mostly in financial services. And I was working for financial companies, banks. And ultimately, I just decided that after several years of that, I wanted to work for somebody that was a smaller company. So it was still in the financial services, but it was a pet insurance company and it was a brand new startup. And I really got the feel for kind of what a startup is like to work for when you're, you know, the third or fourth person hired. And ultimately, I went on and decided that that was the path I wanted to take, but I think I wanted to start it myself. So, kind of done a couple of startups and mostly in the technology world, but I'm a big fan of cold beverages. So when we had the opportunity, when we had the opportunity to kind of take over Backyard Soda, we, I think, saw just a huge opportunity from not only the beverage world, but what was coming down the line in the cannabis world with the passing of the Farm Bill, and just something that was going to be a lot of fun. I don't program software, but I can make a drink or a cocktail. So
I'm a big fan of the Nitro coffee. I think the first time I had that was in around Boulder at like 2014. And that has really added something. I feel like that just, it's so flavorful and effervescent. It's like, what else can we be doing here with drinks? There's just crazy time to be experimenting because people are pretty open to experiment. I mean, Tiger Claw and all this kind of, these type of drinks too is kind of really eating a hole in beer and wine probably. So people are kind of saying, you know what, I'm going to rewrite my whole idea of what an adult beverage is and what coffee is, what everything is. Like I'm going to expand, you know, my palate of what I drink. Would you agree with that?
It has. And I think, you know, I didn't actually drink coffee until I really figured out cold brew. And again, I've kind of got a weird quirk of, I don't really like hot drinks. So, coffee was never really my thing until I could put it on ice. I guess I could have put coffee on ice, but the cold brew was great because it took a lot of the acid out and things like that. But I think with the drinks, you're absolutely right. You know, there's just a lot of, there's people that really want to be that home mixologist at this point. They're open to experimenting. I think they've been out and about now that they're kind of in a situation where, you know, I won't say locked down because I feel like the country's kind of moved a little bit out of that, but there's still a lot of places that aren't open. It just, the world obviously isn't the same. So being able to create really interesting drinks and play around and experiment with this, I think is a ton of fun and gets people to be creative. I think the use of things like SodaStream, where you can carbonate your water and now add, you know, our syrups to make your own CBD drink at home or soda at home. I mean, that has been something that people are starting to realize, hey, I can do this myself. So it's been interesting.
So you're in the space before, you don't like warm drinks and it's a little unusual, but I like guests that have a little strange edge to them. So we'll keep going. So you had a skill set making drinks, and then you're like, hey, what, the cannabis space sounds interesting. Hemp CBD. Do you remember the moment where you just kind of had the idea?
I do actually. And it was back in, summer of 18. And a friend of mine who we had been discussing, just kind of extraction and CBD and what, you know, what can be done and things like that. You know, to me, I found that, you know, consuming CBD, you know, vape pens didn't really, that's not my interest. It seems kind of weird to me. You don't pull out a vape pen, you know, at a social party, or at least maybe some people do, but, I don't. And, you know, taking tinctures and things, it just didn't have a very, what I'll call, social norm to it. But I sort of said, what's more normal than cracking a can of soda or making a cocktail? Why wouldn't we create a CBD infused ingredient that you would put into this? And so that ingredient was our simple syrup. You know, it allowed people who are maybe moving towards the non-alcoholic side, you know, in general, the market is saying, hey, less alcohol is being consumed, but we still want something. And this kind of allows an interesting mocktail that has the benefits of CBD without necessarily having to just drink seltzer water and lime. Okay.
So when you decide then to go into kind of the cannabinoid beverage market, how do you orient yourself in terms of what you think drink consumers want from a cannabinoid beverage? Like, how do you dial that in?
Yeah, well, I tell you, first and foremost, they want something that tastes good. And I know that sounds, you know, counterintuitive a little bit to where, you know, kind of looking at it from the cannabis world. But at the end of the day, like, people buy anything once, but if you want them to buy it 1,000 times, it has to taste good. So I think that was the first and foremost thing that we looked at and said, if we're going to create a cannabis beverage, it has to taste good. It has to, you know, it can't taste like I'm, you know, basically drinking cannabis and, you know, and there's a little bit of taste there. You want them to know it, but you don't want that to be the overpowering flavor. CBD can be very bitter, especially if you're just, you know, utilizing an oil or things, and there's blockers to mask some of those tastes. But, you know, so first and foremost, it has to taste good. Next, we want to make sure that, you know, we were looking at this from a daily user that isn't looking to necessarily manage something. Obviously, if you're, you know, managing some sort of ailment or illness with CBD, and there's some incredible stories out there of what it can do, you know, you're probably not going to go out and drink a bunch of, you know, sodas and cocktails to manage that. Our look at it was, you know, what's kind of that daily use number and things that people might want to have a drink with some benefits. If you're going to have a soda at lunch, if you're going to have a cocktail after dinner, you know, this is a great way to consume a daily dose of CBD from that standpoint. So, you know, we wanted to balance those two. And I think, you know, we've done a pretty good job with that.
Okay. And so when you have a prospect that says, hey, I like the idea of a CBD beverage, how much CBD should I be consuming? I'm sure that's a question you get all the time. And what do you say to that?
Yeah, it's probably the number one question. And it's the problem is that the answer is, I can't tell you the answer. Everybody's body is a little different. Everybody processes a little bit different. It depends on the CBD itself. We utilize a full spectrum. So, you know, we take the whole plant, and that goes along with kind of our ethos of using whole ingredients. Because we believe there's an entourage effect that works when you have not only CBD, but CBG and CBN and some form of or minimal amount of THC, and it all works together from that standpoint. So, you know, it's really hard to say. I know that's not a good answer that anybody wants to hear, but, you know, somebody that consumes 15 milligrams of a full spectrum CBD that's 6'2 and 220 pounds is going to have a very different effect probably than someone that is 5'2 and 105 pounds. So, you know, it just tends to be a tough question to answer. And I think it's something that, you know, hopefully we'll get dialed in as an industry of, hey, this is the right amount. And we believe it's somewhere between 10 and 25 milligrams per day.
Okay. And so each can has how many milligrams?
15.
Okay. Okay. And how do you get the water solubility right for the CBD? Because I know if it's not soluble, it kind of coagulates in the liquid, and it's not a pleasant experience. So how do you work that?
Yeah, well, so luckily we've got a partner that is the extractor that we utilize here in Colorado. So all the industrial hemp that we utilize is grown here in Colorado and extracted here. And luckily they've been able to put together a great water soluble product for us. So really what our focus is on the taste and sort of our formulation of, you know, what are the ingredients that we are utilizing. And then we have the CBD in that water soluble form that allows us to kind of just add it in as we're making our batches. And it's great to talk to them, and it's great to understand their process. It's complicated, so I won't get into it, but, they do a great job, and that is a really important piece of this.
You mentioned whole ingredients earlier. Is it difficult to use whole ingredients more than artificial ingredients? And are there any whole ingredients you're particularly excited about right now?
Whole ingredients is to us is incredibly important. I think there most companies out there, if you look at the back of a can or you look at a lot of, you know, ingredient labels, it will say natural flavors. And to us, it's like, if you've got something that's strawberry flavored or watermelon flavored, and you don't actually see watermelon or strawberry on the ingredient label, you just see natural flavors, that's a turnoff, at least to me. And I think that's where the world is going. We take our ginger for our ginger lime, and we take whole ginger and press that to 100% juice. We use 100% fresh lime juice. The lavender is lavender flower that's grown at a single farm out in Palisade, Colorado. Whole mangoes for our mango jalapeno. We use whole vanilla beans, which is unheard of, to be quite honest, because vanilla is very expensive. Most people will just use an extract. But we also believe that, you know, there are really great properties of utilizing whole, you know, ginger tends to have, you know, people drink ginger ale for, you know, when their stomach is upset, except they're probably just drinking Canada Dry and it's not really doing a whole lot. You know, when you actually consume whole ginger, that really does have that effect. You know, lavender, all of those ingredients have, you know, terpenes, and they also have their own, and I won't call it necessarily medicinal, but effect of whole ingredients is much different than just flavor. So we believe in that wholeheartedly. And like I said, we use that across the board, including the CBD and the cannabis, so that we use all of the terpenes and cannabinoids in the plant.
Now, it's a tricky balance because you want to use the best ingredients possible, but you want to keep your price point reasonable. So how do you kind of balance those two things?
That's a great, great observation. It definitely costs more. And, I think what we have done, we have been able to control our costs, but I think we're also, you know, talking to people about why, you know, you might want to spend a little bit more in order to have that type of whole ingredient. I think people are realizing, and the market in general is realizing, that that natural and organic is really is here to stay. It's not going anywhere. People don't want to see, you know, red dye number whatever or you know, words they can't pronounce on their labels. And I think as people look at their health and they look at what they put into their bodies, they're willing, you know, if it costs a few cents more or it costs 50 cents more, but it is something that is truly all natural, I think people are not only willing to pay for it, but are starting to seek it out because of the fact that they've, you know, just don't want those chemicals in their system.
And what are the retail prices for your drinks? Do you sell them four packs, singles? How does that work?
So really, we leave that up to the stores. Most of them are selling individual cans. We sell a six pack on our site. That six pack goes for $24.99. And then we'll see most stores selling an individual can anywhere from $3.99 to $4.49. It depends a little bit on the retailer, and it depends a little bit on the location. And we hope that those prices do come down right now. I mean, I think that the market is interested, and they're finding benefits of consuming it, and they're willing to pay. But ultimately, I'd love to see those prices down in the $2.99 a can, $3.49 a can, very similar to kombucha that you might see at, many of the grocery stores. Being in line with that kind of product, I think is the right place to be.
And what's the conversation like with the retailers? Is there kind of picking your brain, learning about backyard sodas and how it fits into their lineup?
They it's all so new to then this is a, like an entirely new category. So it's true. They are really learning. I think most see that there's a huge opportunity that truly is about to explode. And it is one of the fastest growing categories, even though it's a brand new category. And so that's exciting for them. I think their biggest question is, where do I put it? Do I put it in the soda aisle? Do I put it in the beer aisle? Do I put it, you know, if you're a liquor store, am I putting it in the mixer aisle? I think those are some of the kinks that kind of need to be worked out a little bit of just what's going on. I think as people walk in and start asking for it and where is it, they'll start to be like, oh, we need to put this in the, you know, the mixer aisle or something to that effect. And, but everybody's a little bit different from there. Other than that, you know, I think at least here in Colorado, the education level is pretty high. I think as other states allow and sort of legalize the industrial hemp to be put into food and beverage in their own state, you know, the education of retailers will become easier.
How about, is there any restaurants or hotels, anybody creating CBD mocktails or anything like that? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, actually there are. We're really excited about it. So we have multiple places here in Denver that are utilizing our syrups and our sodas for a CBD cocktail menu. Luster Pearl in Rhino is one of them. Charcoal Bistro over in Park Hill is another. We had a great opportunity with one of the music venues here in town, Cervantes, that did some signature cocktails for an event when they were having events. You know, that has been actually a really interesting, I think, place that we would like to be once the music venues start to come out, because we are so sort of what I'll call mixer focused. They can create a CBD cocktail or a mocktail, and now you've got, you know, for folks that may be driving or aren't drinking that night, they've got something interesting. For folks that are you know, looking to add it to the alcohol, they can now have like that CBD Moscow Mule or that CBD Margarita, things like that. And I think that the mocktail menu is something that people and restaurants are really starting to want to put out there. You know, as I mentioned before, there is a trend going towards less alcohol. But when you can create an interesting drink that's truly made for someone that isn't interested in consuming alcohol, but it has a fun feel, you know, and you don't have to compromise that taste or that sort of feel, you know, that's important. And you can, bars and restaurants can probably charge almost as much for a great mocktail as they do for an alcoholic cocktail. And that drives some great business. You know, if somebody who isn't drinking is just like, I'll just stick with water because it really isn't anything on the menu that they want, or they have an opportunity to say, oh, I really love the looks of that non-alcoholic cocktail. That looks delicious. You know, why wouldn't you want to sell a mocktail to someone that isn't planning to drink alcohol that night?
Right. So what are your feelings in terms of using CBD isolate versus full spectrum? I know you said you like, you know, whole ingredients, but the masking, which you talked about a little bit earlier, you know, the full spectrum oils can kind of, you really notice that taste. It can stand out. So how do you kind of determine what the right balance is there?
Yeah, it's difficult. And like I said, that whole idea around a beverage is that taste is always number one, no matter what. And so it is important. But, you know, for us, there's no question. Full spectrum is the way to go. You know, the CBD isolate, I think, you know, is certainly easier to work with. But I'm not sure it really necessarily provides all the benefits. There's probably some question around whether or not, if it's used in a pharmaceutical, which I believe, there have been a couple of, maybe just one pharmaceutical products that have come out that are for, I want to say, epilepsy, utilizing the isolate. So the question really becomes around, you know, whether they'll allow beverages and food to introduce just an isolate into it. You know, the FDA will have their ruling of that at some point down the road. I think they've got a lot on their plate right now. But there's been a lot of waiting around for the FDA to kind of give a ruling one way or the other. States are kind of making those rulings on their own. But as I said, I think the FDA has a lot on their plate right now and are probably worried a lot more about, you know, finding a vaccine for COVID versus kind of making rulings on CBD at this point. So it'll be interesting to see what happens and where it goes. We're hoping that that is something that they rule on soon. But for now, we are excited about, you know, what we utilize in our drink.
Talk a little bit about your backyard cocktail kit. What is that and who is that for?
Yeah, so back in March, you know, when things really started to close down, we sort of start to look at what are the opportunities here? Because our business was really based around walking into a restaurant or a bar or a liquor store and saying, you know, how do we get this on the shelf? How do we get this on the menu? You've got to try it. You've got to taste it. Well, if you don't have customers coming in and tastings have really been shut down, you know, what's the next best opportunity here until things get back to normal? So really our focus turned to online. So we created, this might be a little bit a longer answer than your, but to get to it, I just want to kind of give a little bit of background. So we did a bartender contest because all the bars basically were shut down. We provided the bartenders with product and we said, create your best drink with our products. And we got some phenomenal recipes. I mean, and we were really excited about it. And we started to think about just, you know, what are people missing? You know, they're not really excited to walk into stores. You know, places were not seeing the foot traffic. They weren't going to bars because they were closed, but they wanted to be able to make something at home that, you know, where can I get this ingredient? Oh, I got to go to four different places to pick up things. So, you know, we looked at it and said, I think there's a great opportunity here, just similar to HelloFresh or, you know, Home Chef and Blue Apron, where you're getting your meal kits in a box. Why wouldn't you get a cocktail kit in a box? You know, it's delivered through a delivery partner. They provide the spirit, they provide the syrup, they provide any of the accoutrements that need to go with it, as far as, you know, whether that's citrus, whether that's bitters, things like that. And then there's a recipe card that tells you step by step how to make it. It comes with typically 8 to 12 servings. So if you're having a party, you can say, hey, I've got, you know, this really cool cocktail that I want to make. And we've partnered with different distilleries around Denver and let their bartenders create the drinks. We partnered with Peak Beverage here in Denver as a delivery partner and a company called Handoff, which is a Drizzly-like startup where you can just order what you want on the app. And we think it's, you know, perfect opportunity for people to, you know, stay home and have gourmet cocktails in the backyard.
What's it like trying to navigate distribution? I mean, how do you get into retail stores? Was that difficult?
It's very difficult. It is probably one of the more difficult things there is to do. Retail stores, you know, they want to see traction immediately. They're not really interested in taking up shelf space to prove whether or not you can sell a product or not. And so it's not easy, and they've got a lot of products that are coming at them every day. So you've got to be the right price point. You've got to have the right marketing. You've got to have the right branding. You've got to have the right messaging. And that's even for them to just kind of consider taking a look at you. You know, then you hope they'll taste it. And so it's not easy. And we have been really excited and lucky that our products were in Whole Foods. Our non-infused syrups were in Whole Foods. And getting into some of the liquor stores and the bars and restaurants has been challenging, but we've been doing it. And I think our key is getting people to taste the product, because once people taste it, I think people typically are like, wow, this is really great. This is way better than I was expecting, because I've had other CBD stuff and it just doesn't taste that great. So, you know, I think it's all kind of a combination of that. And it takes a long time. It doesn't happen overnight. But as you kind of build relationships and continue to work on social and outreach and messaging, I think they're more inclined to try you out.
Well, you mentioned a few of the flavors, mango, jalapeno. Can you talk about some of the other flavors?
Yeah, so we do five main flavors at our retail for our syrups. So we have mango jalapeno, again, whole mangoes. We do a whole dried jalapeno to basically even out the flavor. If you just throw a jalapeno in there, you don't know whether it's going to be hot or whether it's going to be mild. And so if you dry them and kind of get them chopped up and infused that way, you tend to even out the heat. We do a Madagascar vanilla. And that's made with whole vanilla beans. We do a ginger lime. Like I said, we press that ginger into whole 100% juice. We have a lavender lemon. That lavender is grown out in Palisade. And then we do what we call true grenadine. We've actually changed the naming of it to be pomegranate orange blossom. The reason that we did that is most people think of grenadine, they think of cherry. Real grenadine, the true original recipe of grenadine, is actually using pomegranates, which is why we do a pomegranate orange blossom. And we just saw those as great great flavors for making drinks. We actually do a few other flavors, and we've just recently introduced our CBD root beer. Our root beer is very, very unique, and it's awesome. We love it. And it's made with whole cherry bark and whole sarsaparilla and whole vanilla. And we call it a seven spice root beer. And it's really, we introduced it this summer as a test. It went well. And I think we'll be bringing it out here very soon as a full-time product.
So that's what root beer is from, is sarsaparilla. Is that what you said?
Yep. Yeah,
because I think I've tasted, like, is it a sarsaparilla root, or it's like a little piece of, looks like mulch or something you put in your mouth?
Yeah, exactly. It looks like mulch or bark. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's kind of an interesting experience the first time you try that.
Yep. Yep. It's, you know, but it's kind of and for us, you know, it goes back to, you know, whole ingredients and how root beer was originally made. And, root beer was very medicinal, when it was first brought out, and not that we're looking to, you know, for our root beer to taste like medicine, that is not the case, but we wanted to infuse all those ingredients to make that original kind of root beer taste. This is not A&W, or it's not Dad's.
Yeah. So like originally back in the day, people would say that's a tonic, like a health tonic. And they're sometimes talking about drinks like this, like a sarsaparilla root tonic.
Yeah. Right?
That helps you feel, makes your general wellness just feels better after consuming it.
Exactly. Exactly. And again, that all goes back to consuming whole ingredients. You know, you're not going to get that effect from a heavy corn syrup laden root beer syrup that just has a bunch of, you know, artificial flavors and things like that in there. There's, you know, a way to make root beer and make it taste like that, but actually utilizing, you know, like I said, barks and leaves and things like that. And that's what we do.
Okay.
Gosh, I really would hope we stop using corn syrup altogether for drinks and treats and stuff like that. I just don't know who wants that. Anybody knows what it is?
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, we use pure cane sugar from our standpoint, and I don't get corn syrup must be very cheap or something, but it's the base of so many drinks right now, and it really is. It's pretty gross. So.
Well, you were in the Canopy Boulder Cannabis Accelerator Program. Can you talk about that a little bit and your experience there?
Yeah, I mean, it was a fantastic program. If people are familiar with kind of the concept of a business accelerator, it really kind of started in the tech industry, and you had Techstars and Y Combinator, and they basically take small companies with an idea, or maybe they're just getting to a prototype or something. They set them up with mentors. They set them up, with being able to create models and help really from the marketing standpoint and bounce ideas off. And it's sort of basically like a mini MBA. I was lucky enough that I had already gotten my MBA. So now this was really on concentrating on getting product to market. So they typically have about 250 applications from all over the world. They pick 10 companies to be a part of their cohort. We were one of those 10 companies last summer. We went in with this idea for them and we said, look, we've got this syrup. We want to be doing an infused CBD syrup, and we also want to bring this out in an RTD can. And in 16 weeks, we started, and by the end, producing cans and putting them on shelves. So, it was truly a phenomenal experience and truly an accelerated experience.
Accelerated his job.
Exactly. There's no way we would have been able to do that just sort of by ourselves. We would eventually have gotten there, but certainly it helped, and having those resources helped. And they, put in an investment. They've got a great opportunity to be pitching in front of different investors and other networks. It was just a fabulous experience, and I couldn't tell you how happy we were to be a part of it and to be an alumni and still be working with them on a regular basis. Bounce it. Once you're alum, you can call up anytime. You can send an email. You can go up to the office. You're really part of a great network.
And where are you in the capital raising process now?
Yeah, so we're basically raising seed right now. Our goal was we're raising $750,000. We have taken a little bit different approach, and I think it's because we're a CPG, and that takes a lot of branding. So, we kind of look at it a couple different ways. You can obviously do that by buying as much, sort of placement as you can, except it's very, very expensive to build a brand from scratch and just kind of try and place things and put your brand out there. Really, where does branding come from? In my opinion, it comes from, having people try it and be evangelists and telling people about it. My philosophy is you don't have a brand until somebody walks out of the store because your product wasn't on the shelf. And so what we wanted to do was raise through a crowdfund. And so we've actually done that twice now. Our first crowdfund raise was back last fall, with a company called Microventures. And we raised our goal in 45 days, and that was fantastic. We were approached by multiple other crowdfund sites, and we actually decided to do another one, and we've been very successful there. It's actually about to close in about a week, so there's still opportunity to get in. But, we look at that as having now 500, 1,000 people that not only are, trying our product, they're telling people, and they're evangelists. They're part of the company. They're going to own equity from that standpoint. And so they want to tell people to use the product. And that's that's what we need right now. It's hard to do that with, you know, a couple of salespeople, but when you've got 1,000 people, we've got some great stuff. We have an investor that came through the crowdfund, and he's making all kinds of introductions to distributors and sending out product to his people that he knows all over the country who may have some interest in, oh, wow, this is really great. I know somebody that would be great to distribute this in Illinois or whatever the case might be. And so we just, you know, it's really interesting. I think at our next round of financing, I do hope to go the more traditional kind of VC angel kind of group and bring in then kind of a larger check to allow us now then to, you know, start to really build the brand out so that, you know, not only the people can see it and try it, but, you know, are starting to see it mentioned places and on shelves.
Okay. Well, Jonathan, I like to ask a few personal development questions to help listeners get a better sense of who you are personally. With that, is there a book that's had a big impact on your life or your way of thinking that you'd like to share?
You know, I'm an avid reader, but I'm not. I read a lot. I like to read a lot of articles. I like to be very current. I think the book that probably, if I'm thinking about a business book, that's really been one of the guiding principles is Good to Great, Jim Collins. It's not necessarily something that is brand new. It's been around for a long time, but just sort of the case studies and the examples in there of leadership and how companies kind of evolve through the growth process, I think has been something. It's hard, don't get me wrong, to emulate, especially when you're as small as we are, but we try.
Okay. And what is one thing that you believe to be true that most people disagree with you on?
Well, I would say, not getting too overly political here, especially in the current times, you know, I actually believe that we're putting ourselves in a lot of stress around education and kind of how people are focused on it. I have 2 kids. One of them is a sophomore in college. He ended up going to school, was there for 3 weeks, and they said, all right, we've got a bunch of cases and we're sending everybody home. You know, my opinion is there's a lot of people out there that are scared and are worried, and we're putting, you know, kids and teachers and things. So I wish that, you know, they just said, you know what, we're just not going to have school anywhere for the next year. No one's going to fall behind. You know, if you graduate at 19 instead of 18, if you, you know, and just let's get through this without having to put any undue pressure on, you know, children and teachers. I would say it's probably not the most common thing to hear. I think people really like the fact that, you know, well, my kids are going back to school, but there's just so many schools that are finding that it's just really difficult. And, you know, having a model of hybrid where somebody goes 2 days a week and somebody goes, you know, 3 days a week and then 2 weeks online and then you're back in school. It's just so confusing. It just seems like we all could have taken a year and just figured it out and then gone back and started where we left off.
That's good point. I don't know if their revenue models support that, so that could be the reason.
Well, maybe. But, you know, revenue and education aren't exactly the two peas in a pod. So,
well, you said that in a very nice, kind way. You must have had a few CBD beverages before. Well, one other question, Ohio question for you. I've gone to Ohio twice in the last couple of years to check out Cleveland and Columbus, and I feel like the center of the country is starting to become cooler again. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we lived in Ohio. I grew up in Ohio. I grew up in central Ohio. My father's side of the family is all from Ohio and Cleveland. So I grew up as a, and always will be, an Indians and a Browns fan. And I think that there's just a lot of, you know, Midwest value and just kind of, you know, people really are down to earth. And I think as people leave and go away to school and maybe live on the coasts of New York and LA and San Francisco, and then they realize, oh my God, it costs a fortune to live here. The quality of life, and, you know, I can spend $2 million for a bungalow in Los Angeles, or I can spend $200,000 and have, you know, a nice big home in Cleveland, Ohio. What am I doing? And so you're seeing a little bit of a renaissance from food and cocktail bars and just things like that happening in some of these Midwest places where you couldn't necessarily get that a few years ago. But now it's way cheaper to open up a restaurant or a bar in Cleveland than it is in San Francisco or in Seattle or DC and things like that. So, you know, I think that I'm excited. I love it here. I probably am not, you know, moving back to Ohio anytime soon because they don't get enough sun. But I'm excited for the folks and all my friends that are there to be experiencing it.
That's true. I remember it was like a couple of years ago, I think Ohio had like 100 straight days of no sun.
It's impossible. It was really, it can get pretty depressing. At least for me, it was in the dead of winter, you know, where you might not see the sun from Thanksgiving to spring. And don't get me wrong, you get a few of those days. Yeah, the sun makes a huge difference to me. But there probably is no better month in Ohio than September. It is absolutely glorious there. So
yeah. And you're not kidding about the values there. I was in an area of Cleveland called Hingetown, and there was these doctors from the Cleveland Clinic that were buying these these brownstones that had like a view of the lake there. And they were, I can't remember how cheap they were, but I mean, they did need a little work, but I was thinking, wow, if this is still a major metropolitan area, it has a lake view, it's like cool coffee shops around. Yep. And I just couldn't believe how cheap they're buying them for, and, you know, gentrification full force. So I'm rooting for it because I hope, you know, it'd be fun to have some cool cities in the middle of the country. And they already are cool, but it's just fun to see like some places in the Midwest people want to go to.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, you know, the cool part is that, you know, a lot of those places have these older buildings that are total blank canvases, you know. And so somebody can come in and say, I've got a building and, you know, I want to turn it into a cool office, or I want to, you know, create an apartment or a condo, or even like the brownstone, and really just kind of put the modern touches that you want and you see kind of coming from the design centers that are out there, and applying them to these places that you can pick up for an incredible steal. And then all of a sudden you've got, you know, what would be in a magazine in New York, or like I said, San Francisco or something, in Cleveland, or in Columbus or Cincinnati or Pittsburgh or Milwaukee. I mean, it's all kind of, they're all very similar cities. Yeah. And that just, you know, it's pretty cool. I think that, you know, we're going to see a lot. I think those cities are going to see some growth.
Jonathan, give out your website and let people know how they can contact you and learn more about Backyard Sodas and everything you're doing.
Yep. So our site is www.backyardsodas.com. That's plural. Sodas is plural. We've got all of our products on there. First-time customers have an opportunity to utilize a discount code that'll you can sign up for. And it gives you a chance to try some products. And we've got all kinds of recipes on the website. We have new recipes that we try and put up monthly. And, you know, as I mentioned before, everything's about kind of keeping it simple. So these aren't recipes that are, you know, outrageous or what kind of, I've never heard of that ingredient. They're just really tasty and easy to make, and allow people to kind of play mixologist on their own.
Well, I'm toasting you right now, virtually. You can't see it, but I toast you. Great job, you know, building this company and everything you're doing. It's really cool. I wanted to try one of these drinks soon, and I'll give you my feedback.
Yeah, we'd love to have you do that, and let me know. Love to have you try out the product and make some of those drinks, you know, for you and your friends.
Cool. Jonathan, thanks a lot. Thanks for coming on the show. Good luck.
Hey, Matt, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. It's been great to talk with you, and I look forward to our paths crossing down the road at some point.
If you enjoyed the show today, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever app you might be using to listen to the show. Every 5-star review helps us to bring the best guest to you. Learn more at cannainsider.com/iTunes. What are the 5 disruptive trends that will impact the cannabis industry in the next 5 years? Find out with your free report at cannainsider.com/trends. Have a suggestion for an awesome guest on Canna Insider? Simply send us an email at feedback@cannainsider.com. We'd love to hear from you. Please do not take any information from Canna Insider or its guests as medical advice. Contact your licensed physician before taking cannabis or using it for medical treatments. Promotional consideration may be provided by select guests, advertisers, or companies featured in Canna Insider. Lastly, the host or guests on Canna Insider may or may not invest in the companies or entrepreneurs profiled on the show. Please consult your licensed financial advisor before making any investment decisions. Final disclosure to see if you're still paying attention. This little whistle jingle you're listening to will get stuck in your head for the rest of the day. Thanks for listening, and look for another Canna Insider episode soon. Take care. Bye-bye.